I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The message given today to Israel with this veto is that it can continue to get away with murder. Israel cannot and should not and will not get away with it. We will not allow it.
For the third time, the U.S. vetoes a U.N. Security Council resolution demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. The Biden administration's backing of Israel has sparked widespread criticism, including in Michigan, home to one of the largest populations of Arab Americans in the country. We'll host a discussion with California Congressmember Ro Khanna and state representative from Michigan, Abraham Ayash. She's the Michigan House Majority Leader. Ro Khanna's headed to Michigan to meet with Muslim and Arab American leaders in the state. Then to London, where a critical appeal for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange against his extradition to the United States is underway at the British High Court of Justice.
This case is an admission by the United States that they now criminalize investigative journalism. It's an attack on all journalists all over the world. It's an attack on the truth, and it's an attack on the public's right to know.
We'll go outside the British High Court to get the latest. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. It was the third ceasefire veto issued by the U.S. at the U.N. body. This is Palestinian U.N. Ambassador Riyad Mansour.
The message given today to Israel with this veto is that it can continue to get away with murder. Israel cannot and should not and will not get away with it. We will not allow it. This veto does not absolve Israel of its obligations, nor of those who shield it.
The U.S. circulated its own resolution this week calling for a temporary ceasefire as soon as practicable, unquote. This comes as the death toll and humanitarian crisis in Gaza continue to mount. The World Food Program has been forced to pause food aid to northern Gaza due to the chaotic conditions. UNICEF has warned at least 1 in 6 children in the north are acutely malnourished. In southern Gaza, the World Health Organization Tuesday completed a second evacuation mission from the beleaguered Nasser Hospital, which was rendered non-functional after Israeli attacks. This is the WHO's Julio Martinez.
You can think about the worst situation ever. You multiply by 10, and this is the worst situation I have seen in my life. It's the debris, the light, working in the darkness, patients everywhere.
The World Health Organization says there are still some 150 patients and medical workers who remain on site at Nasser Hospital in life-threatening conditions. Lebanese media has said one woman was killed in Israeli shelling in the town of Majd al-Zoun in southern Lebanon. Israeli missiles also hit the Kafr Susa district in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Back in the United States, Jewish American activists and others condemned President Biden as he attended a lavish fundraiser hosted by the pro-Israel Democratic megadonor billionaire Chaim Saban in Los Angeles. Yemen's Houthi movement said Tuesday it struck an Israeli cargo ship in the Gulf of Aden with missiles and targeted a number of U.S. warships in the Red and Arabian Seas. The Houthis also claimed attacks at several sites in the southern Israeli town of Eilat. The latest assaults come after U.S. officials reported Monday Houthi fighters had also shot down a U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drone flying near Yemen. The Houthis have vowed to keep targeting ships until Israel stops its attacks on Gaza. The Biden administration said it's preparing major sanctions against Russia. in response to the death of Alexei Navalny in an Arctic prison, which it has blamed on President Vladimir Putin. Meanwhile, in Russia, Navalny's family is building pressure for Russian prison authorities to release the body of Navalny. The ex-social media account of Navalny's widow, Yulia Navalnaya, was temporarily suspended after she posted a video statement accusing Putin of killing Navalny and hiding his body to cover up the assassination. Navalnaya has vowed to take over from her husband and lead the opposition movement. In Spain, the body of a man who was found shot dead last week is believed to be a Russian pilot who defected to Ukraine in a military helicopter 6 months ago. Maxim Kuzmanov's body was reportedly found in an underground garage with multiple bullet wounds. In response to the news, Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service director referred to Kuzmanov as a traitor and moral corpse. In London, lawyers for the U.S. government are arguing before the British High Court that Julian Assange should be extradited to the United States, where he faces espionage charges and life in prison, 175 years, for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. The appeal is likely the last chance for the imprisoned WikiLeaks founder to avoid extradition. Julian Assange's wife, Stella, debriefed crowds of supporters Tuesday after the defense presented its case to the court.
Whatever happens in the coming days, it's now been aired in court. The murder plot, the political motivation coming out of Mike Pompeo's obsession with killing Julian, and the murders that Julian exposed in Iraq and Afghanistan, the torture program that European countries willingly participated in. We free Julian, we regain our democracy.
Later in the broadcast, we'll go to London outside the High Court. In Pakistan, two major parties, the Pakistan People's Party and the Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, have agreed to form a coalition following intense negotiations. Elections earlier this month ended without any party receiving a parliamentary majority, though ousted and jailed former Prime Minister Imran Khan's PTI party secured the most seats in a major upset. Another former prime minister, Shahbaz Sharif, has been named as the coalition's candidate for prime minister. This comes as a top administrative official confessed to vote tampering and resigned. After making the stunning admission, he expressed regret for, quote, stabbing the country in its back, unquote. Imran Khan's party has accused the powerful military of rigging the vote against him. In Somalia, the U.S. is facing accusations it killed two Cuban doctors during a recent airstrike targeting the militant group al-Shabaab. The Cuban doctors had been kidnapped by al-Shabaab 5 years ago. They've been serving in Kenya as part of a program where Cuba sends medical professionals across the globe to help improve access to health care. The doctors have been identified as Asal Herrera Correa and Landy Rodriguez Hernandez. Authorities in Rwanda have rejected calls by the U.S. government to withdraw its troops and missile systems from eastern Congo as clashes escalate in the region. Rwanda is accused of supporting the M23 militia. The intensifying conflict between the Democratic Republic of Congo's army and M23 has disrupted food supply lines to the eastern city of Goma, impacting more than 2 million people.
This will result in famine because all of us in Goma depend on the Minova Road for agricultural products. They must do everything to reopen this road. I am convinced that opening this road will resolve the problem and everything will be fine. The country's authorities must do everything in their power to end the war. It's sure that after the war, everything will be fine. They must do everything to end this war.
Congolese protesters have called out Western countries' complicity in the worsening violence and humanitarian crisis in eastern Congo as millions have been displaced. Back in the United States, the Supreme Court rejected a case challenging the admissions policy at a prestigious Virginia high school, which has increased the school's diversity. The Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, frequently ranked the country's top school, changed its admissions policy in 2020, resulting in a 6% increase in Latinx students and an 8% boost in Black students. The new policy also allowed for more low-income students, English language learners and girls to be accepted into the school. Plaintiffs argue the policy discriminates against Asian Americans whose representation in the student body fell from roughly 70% to 50%. Last year, the Supreme Court struck down affirmative action in college admissions. In a decision that shocked many in the medical community, the Alabama Supreme Court has ruled frozen embryos should be considered children. The ruling came in a case filed by a couple who sued a fellow patient who accidentally dropped a test tube, destroying the frozen embryos of the couple. The Alabama justices ruled the frozen embryos should be afforded the same protection as babies under the Wrongful Death of a Minor Act. Reproductive rights advocates say the ruling could result in the end of in vitro fertilization in Alabama and some other states. In Oklahoma, a 16-year-old non-binary high school sophomore died earlier this month, the day after they were assaulted by three girls in a high school bathroom. The student, Nex Benedict, reportedly suffered severe head injuries during the fight, but officials at Owosso High School reportedly did not call an ambulance. According to one account, Nex Benedict died due to complications from brain trauma. Family members said Nex faced bullying since last year. In 2022, Oklahoma lawmakers passed a law banning transgender students from using bathrooms that correspond to their gender identity. And more information has emerged about the ex-FBI informant who was indicted for lying about President Biden and his son, Hunter Biden, receiving millions of dollars from the Ukrainian energy company Burisma. Prosecutors say Alexander Smirnov blamed Russian intelligence agents for sharing the false information about the Bidens. A judge in Las Vegas ordered Smirnov's release on bond Tuesday pending trial. He's also required to surrender his U.S. and Israeli passports. The lies about the Bidens are central to Republican efforts to impeach the president. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The second and final day of a critical appeal for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is underway today at the British High Court of Justice in what could be Assange's last chance to stop his extradition to the United States. Julian Assange has been charged under the U.S. Espionage Act and faces a 175-year prison sentence for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Assange was again unable to attend today's hearing due to serious poor health and is not even able to follow the proceedings via video, according to his lawyers. Julian Assange has been held in London's Belmarsh prison since 2019. Prior to that, he spent 7 years holed up inside Ecuador's embassy in London. Ecuador had granted him political asylum. On Tuesday, Assange's lawyers told the court that the case was politically motivated, arguing Assange was targeted for his exposure of, quote, state-level crimes. Meanwhile, lawyers representing the U.S. government argued today that Assange's prosecution, quote, might be unprecedented, but what he did was unprecedented, they said. For more, we're going outside the British High Court, where we're joined by Matt Kennard, who's been closely following the hearings. He's head of investigations at the journalism website Declassified UK. His new book, The Racket, a rogue reporter versus the American empire, is out in June. Matt, welcome back to Democracy Now! Thanks so much for joining us. This is the lunch break of the high court. Yesterday, the lawyers for Julian Assange made their case. Today, the lawyers for the U.S. government argued he should be extradited to the United States. Can you talk about what the judges who are hearing this case have been most interested in? And your assessment of the presentation so far?
Well, firstly, I should just say that this case, this hearing today and yesterday, is merely about whether Julian Assange has a right to appeal the extradition to the United States. That decision was made a couple of years ago, and he wants to appeal it on the substantive issues. And yesterday, his lawyers went through the main issue, which is that this is a political prosecution, which is prohibited in the US-UK extradition treaty of 2003. You can't send someone to the United States for political offences. They argued that even taken at its highest, the US indictment is indicting him under the Espionage Act, effectively as a spy, and that is a political offence. So that was how it started. They also argued that it contravenes the European Convention on Human Rights. Article 7 is about foreseeability. In 2010, when he began releasing the US cables, he had no way of knowing that what he was doing was a criminal offence because it's never been prosecuted by the US government before, even revealing the names of human informants. So, and then they went on to Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights, which is about freedom of speech and free expression and press freedom. Again, a huge violation of that, of course, if Assange goes to the United States. And today, the US lawyer, effectively, her case was about trying to differentiate Assange from journalists. They were saying he's not a journalist, he's a hacker, he's a computer scientist, when, of course, it's clear to everyone that Assange is a journalist. He revealed more criminality by the world's most powerful country than anyone's ever done in history. So for me, watching the case, the arguments being given by both lawyers today, it's clear that Assange should be allowed an appeal on the substantive issues, because the original ruling in January 2021, by District Judge Vanessa Baratza, blocked the extradition of Julian Assange to the United States, but on very narrow grounds. She agreed with every dot and comma, effectively, of the US indictment, but said that he was a suicide risk and the extradition should be blocked on those grounds. The US then appealed, won that appeal, and said that we won't treat him in the ways that the district judge assumed. We won't put him under SAMS, which is extremely onerous prison conditions. But that was then again, and that judge found that favoured the US. But Assange was never allowed to appeal that original ruling on a substantive issue. So we must, for British justice, for global justice, because of course this this case is about global journalism, because Assange is an Australian citizen who committed these so-called crimes that the US is indicting for outside of the US. So if Britain does extradite Assange to the United States, that gives the US extraterritorial reach to go anywhere around the world, pluck any journalist who's publishing information they don't like, and bring him to the United States. It's hugely worrying for not just for journalists in this jurisdiction, but any jurisdiction around the world.
Matt, you mentioned that Assange is an Australian citizen. On Wednesday, Australia's parliament overwhelmingly approved a motion calling for his release. Is this significant at all in terms of the course of these hearings or what might follow?
Well, I mean, I don't think it is, unfortunately, because we know the political pressure that has been brought on the United States government. There's been presidents all over the world, from Lula to Petro in Colombia, and they've all been calling and for the United States to drop this case and saying it's a huge violation of freedom of the press. But it's not happened. And then you've got civil society organizations, NGOs all around the world interested in press freedom saying that this is a huge violation of press freedom. And it's had no impact on either party, because, of course, this indictment was first brought by the Trump administration and then carried on by the Biden administration. So it's a bipartisan consensus in Washington that they want to get Assange. But what should protect Assange in this case when he's being persecuted by the political system in the United States is an independent judiciary in Britain. Of course, that's how we're told it works. But unfortunately, I believe that the UK judiciary has been captured by the state in this case, which is one of the surest signs of authoritarianism. And not only captured by the UK state, but captured by the US state. That also goes for the penal system. Why is Julian Assange in Belmarsh Maximum Security Prison in London? This is called Britain's Guantanamo. It's full of rapists, paedophiles, terrorists. He's never been charged and convicted of anything other than a bail violation in the UK. That conviction was spent in under 2 years. He's still there on remand, and it's nearly 5 years he's been there. So the whole thing has been irregular from the start. So I don't hold up too much hope for the British justice system. I think that where there is hope is global public opinion. And as you can hear behind me, there's the people on the ground are really coming out to support Julian Assange in Britain. We don't have the support in the same way from the mainstream media or even civil society as much as it should here, but that could change the game. So hopefully that pressure will tell. I do believe that it may look so bad for the British justice system to not allow an appeal that they will allow this to go forward, but we don't know. This case has been irregular from the start.
And you mentioned the folks outside the courtroom. Could you describe the scene out there and the level of public support for Assange in the UK?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. There's two sides to this story in Britain, in that on this ground, there's a lot of people coming out to support him. You can see behind me, it's pouring with rain here, or it was. But you've got hundreds of people out here. Yesterday, there were thousands probably. Making a lot of noise, and these people understand the stakes that this case holds, because this isn't just about Julian Assange. Of course it is about saving the life of a brave journalist who revealed state criminality on an unprecedented level, but it's also about all of us. This goes to the very core of freedom in Britain, in the United States, globally, this case. And not just not just in the short term. If they get Assange, then that's not power. They won't just thank themselves and close up shop. They will use the precedent that sets to go after more and more people. The levies will break, and it will be a huge nail in the coffin for investigative journalism, for any kind of publishing of information that state powers don't like. And it will be used by repressive regimes all around the world as an example of what they can do if the United States is allowed to do it. If a country like Turkey, which puts hundreds of journalists in prison, is taken to task for that, they can just say, well, look, the United States brought Julian Assange over to the US and stuck him in a prison for the rest of his life for revealing your war crimes. Why can't we do it? They can also then say, well, look, the British so-called independent judges agreed with that extradition and did it themselves, so Britain has no leg to stand on. So we're talking about really, really serious basic issues, and these are issues that need to be heard in a British court, because today we're hearing some of these issues, but it's only a two-day hearing. What Assange's lawyers want is a right to have this appeal and these substantive issues aired in public for everyone over an extended period. I should also mention that yesterday they mentioned in court that the Yahoo News article, this is when 34 former US officials went on the record to explain that the Trump senior levels of the Trump administration and the CIA had sketched plans to kill or kidnap Julian Assange in London because they didn't like his reporting. Now, in my opinion, that should have the case thrown out immediately. How can you extradite a journalist and publisher to the country which is on record as plotting to assassinate him? Add to that, there's other revelations that have come out that the CIA spied on his privileged conversations with his lawyers. Again, any normal case, that would just get the case thrown out completely. But this is not a normal case. And the British justice system is not applying the rule of law or due process in this case. Matt, in the case of Daniel Ellsberg, which US listeners will know well, the Pentagon Papers case, his case was thrown out because it was revealed that the Nixon administration had burglarized his psychiatrist's office to get dirt on him, to smear him in the media. That's not as bad as what we've heard about what they've done to Assange already, but nothing seems to the British justice system seems to be impervious to the murder plot and to the spying of
the
CIA.
Well, Matt, I wanted to go to that point you raised about Yahoo News. We spoke with the investigative reporter Michael Isikoff with Yahoo News back in 2021. His piece was headlined "Kidnapping, Assassination, and a London Shootout: Inside the CIA's Secret War Plans Against WikiLeaks." He details how the CIA considered abducting and possibly murdering Assange while he took refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy in London to avoid being extradited. So more than 30 former officials, as you said, described how then-CIA Director Mike Pompeo was apparently motivated to get even with WikiLeaks following its publication of sensitive CIA hacking tools called Vault 7, which the agency considered the largest data loss in CIA history. This is Michael Isikoff laying out the story.
But what really set Mike Pompeo, the new CIA director, off was that Vault 7 leak. This was on his watch. This was his agency. And while Pompeo had been somewhat dismissive of the Russia allegations and Assange's role in that, the Vault 7 leak focused his energies on getting back at WikiLeaks and Assange, at dismantling the organization. I was in the room when Pompeo gave that speech in early April 2017, where he described for the first time WikiLeaks as a non-state hostile intelligence service. I thought and assumed, like many, it was some kind of rhetorical talking point, a grabby line that Pompeo had come up with. In fact, that designation internally opened the door for the CIA to launch and plan all sorts of operations that didn't require a presidential finding and didn't and wasn't going to be briefed to Capitol Hill. These were offensive counterintelligence activities. Pompeo, there's abduction plans to basically a snatch operation to take Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy. There was talk of assassination, although we want to be clear, that never was forwarded to the White House. That was internally within the CIA. The abduction plans were, as part of a much broader, multi-pronged CIA attack on WikiLeaks that included stealing computers, surveillance of WikiLeaks associates, sowing discord among its members, and Trump White House lawyers raised concerns that...
That's Michael Isikoff explaining on Democracy Now! This assassination attempt. We just have 30 seconds, Matt Kennard. Apparently, the lawyers for Julian Assange introduced new evidence. The judges seem to be interested in this. Can you summarize, will there be possibly more hearings in a British court? And then what happens? If they decide to extradite him, he is like a month before he's extradited?
Well, so if the appeal is granted, it goes back to court, and they can argue the substantive issues. If they reject the right to appeal, that's the UK legal system exhausted. But there is the European Court of Human Rights, which can issue what is called a Rule 39, which would stay the extradition until the European Court can look at the case. But again, as I said, Britain hasn't applied the rule of law or due process in this case, so it could be that they get into the United States before the European Court of Human Rights can even issue that injunction to stop the extradition.
Matt Kennard, we thank you so much for being with us, head of investigations at the journalism website Declassified UK. His new book, The Racket, A Rogue Reporter Versus the American Empire, out in June. Previously, the director at the Center for Investigative Journalism in London, speaking outside the British High Court, the 2 days of hearings going on right now on extradition, a request by the United States to send Julian Assange to the U.S., where, if convicted, he faces 175 years in prison. Coming up, for the third time, the U.S. vetoes a U.N. Security Council resolution demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. The Biden administration's backing of Israel has sparked widespread criticism, including in Michigan, home to one of the largest Arab American populations in the country. We'll host a discussion with Michigan State Representative Abraham Ayash and California Congress member Ro Khanna, who's headed to Michigan to meet with Muslim and Arab American leaders in the state. Stay with us.